folks, you know that every Tuesday in this segment, we visit with folks affiliated with the NOLA Coalition. And these are the difference makers in our community. It's one of my favorite segments of the entire week because we get to learn so much about what people are doing in our city, what's making a difference. They're down in the trenches. You don't hear about them much, but they're working hard each and every day. And I think there's a new level of appreciation. At least I've been told that by folks that are working in the not-for-profit communities across our city. And as we continue to highlight what they do. And today's no different. We are joined by Tiffany Martinez, Community Resources Director of HRI Community Resources. And she's working with the HCR mission. Group, and she's here to talk to us about it. Tiffany, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Noel. I'm excited to be here with you.
Well, thank you for joining us. So tell us about HCR's missions.
Yes, so HCR is the acronym for HRI Community Resources, and kind of a new kid to the block, but you're probably familiar with, as many of your listeners, with HRI Communities, which is a longstanding real estate developer here in New Orleans and also nationally. So they've made an investment with some seed funding and initial capital to really bring this nonprofit affiliate HRI Community Resources on board as a charitable arm to really bring more supportive services to multiple communities. They also have investment with HRI Management, who is the apartment affiliate who specializes in high quality of living, also a champion of HRI Community Resources, making sure our residents have what they need to thrive in creating more sustainable neighborhoods and communities.
So talk to us about some of the programs that you guys have implemented.
Absolutely. So in the last year, HRI Community Resources really was renovating and rejuvenated in 2024. And so in the last year, we've really been focused on bringing more resources, health and wellness programming to our communities. One great new partner at Murray Senior Apartments is with Tulane University. They're providing free health screenings each month to our community members. And something that sets this a little bit apart from being an extraordinary relationship is one of our residents there, Mr. Doc, as he's known in the community, is actually a graduate of Tulane Medical, as well as his dad was in 1933. And so it really has provided a full circle moment for the students that are providing these free health screenings for our residents, but I think they enjoy talking to Doc just as much as the actual experience they're getting from the service that they're providing. So that's one partnership. Also literacy. I think we all are aware our levels of literacy in Louisiana is something that we're all striving to increase and improve. So we do have a great partnership with the crew of Dolly, who has been a real champion in bringing free books to families through all the zip codes in New Orleans. So that is something that we are able to promote now in all of our communities with residents at new move-in time. So they're able to sign their kids up for free books and start their home library. I think we all can agree that a home library at home is magical and really can increase our literacy levels.
No doubt. Now, you refer to communities many times. I know a lot of folks are familiar with HRI, but when you talk about communities, describe what we're actually talking about.
When we say communities, we're talking about not only just the single apartment household families, but really the surrounding communities as well as making sure that we are fostering vibrant and resilient communities, connecting families, focusing on the strengths in the community, really trying to foster a level of leadership. So those that are living in And one term, you know, we talk about affordable housing. Sometimes, unfortunately, it gets a negative perception. I was at the New Orleans Habitat for Humanity Housing Summit last week, and great discussion, great panelists. And one item of many that really stuck out was changing that narrative to housing affordability and what that really means. And that's really just making sure that everyone has access to housing that they're able to afford, whether that's rent or home ownership, without spending excessive amounts of their income. So when we're talking about communities, it's whole communities.
You also, you guys have been difference makers in mixed-use developments as well, right? Traditional rent facilities as well as subsidized facilities, too, all of which have been huge successes in the city.
Absolutely. I think a prime example of that is a new development, St. Bernard Circle, which is right across the street from the historic Circle Food Store. They also have two retail spaces in the front of that 51 units that is for low and moderate income housing. And so really bringing some businesses, new businesses to communities is a way for economic mobility and increasing what is available to those.
Yeah. Now, I think y'all have y'all embarked on a scholarship program as well?
We have. We have launched our Achieve Scholarship Program, and this was really geared towards the residents who are considered non-traditional students. So we know there are a lot of scholarship opportunities out there for high school graduating students, but we do have a lot of residents who are wanting to start their career journey maybe later in life and ready to pursue a career. So we are looking for local businesses or champions who would like to support a $1,000 one-time donation scholarship for these individuals. And there really is a variety of career paths that they're going into. HCR has completed applications as well as interviews with multiple applicants already. So nursing and electrical engineer and real estate are just a couple of the skills that we are looking to link our participants to a local business.
Also, if folks are interested in participating or volunteering in helping in some respect, where would they go?
The easiest thing to do would be to visit our website at hriproperties/hcr.com. Or you could reach out to me, tiffany.martinez@hricommunities.com. We have multiple opportunities and we love to bring creativity to our communities. So if whatever your level of involvement, volunteering that you would like to support, we would have a place for you.
Now, you guys have a fundraiser coming up as well, right? And they can get information at that same website. Tell us about the fundraiser.
Absolutely. So, Newell, have you ever been to a meat raffle before?
No.
No. All right. Well, we are hosting our second annual fundraiser, Help Meet Families' Needs. It's going to be Thursday, November 20th at NOLA Brewery at 5:30. This is an opportunity for us to celebrate and thank all of our champions throughout the year who have been able to donate to programs and resources. It's also, we have a live band, but it's also an opportunity for you to win some meat. I don't know what it is, but there's something about buying some tickets and hearing your number called and going to a cooler and picking out some boudin. That is just exhilarating, and all of the proceeds go back to our families and communities. So this is open for sponsorships and individuals to come out and enjoy.
Well, any kind of win is exhilarating, and on behalf of the Saints, I know they're looking for
absolutely.
I participated in a football pool, Tiffany, for 13 years and never won a single quarter.
No. I'm currently in a fantasy football league with some ladies, and I'm not going to tell you what place I'm in right now. I forgot to set my lineup the first week, and nobody called me to remind me.
Shocking. You have a competitive group. Shocking.
I do. And the most of the group, they're all nonprofit teachers, a couple real estate agents. So I guess it's true. We work hard and play hard.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for all that y'all are doing in the community, and we wish you great success. Repeat that website again that you folks can go to if they'd like to volunteer or find out more information. They go where?
They can visit HRIproperties/HCR/.com.
All righty. Well, thank you so much. Tiffany Martinez, Community Resources Director of the HRI Community Resources. Have a great week. All righty. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Ed Walters. He's the president of the Louisiana State Bar Association. In several weeks past, we had a really good conversation, and I promised Ed that we'd have him back on to talk about all the things that the Bar Association does. Lawyers are the brunt of a lot of different jokes and a lot of different things. As a lawyer, I know, and I can tell you that without lawyers, there's a lot that would not happen, would never happen, and is not capable of happening. And Ed is here to kind of remind us a little bit about that. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Thanks for having me back.
So, Ed, I know that, you know, we had some things that we talked about last week, and I know that you guys are really much, very much involved in the community at large. Tell us about some of the things that the Bar Association is doing today.
Great. I'm glad you asked me about that. You know, one of the things that we try, of course, we regulate the lawyers, you know, and that, as a lawyer, you know that. But we do a lot of community outreach. I was looking at some things this morning to prepare myself for this. And we do a lot of pro bono work to go give free legal services to the poor, throughout the state, the poor and the disadvantaged. I looked up some statistics that said 19% of Louisiana citizens are below the poverty line, 32% can't afford basic living expenses, and 27% of our citizens are illiterate. So what the statistics show also is that people in those categories have legal problems, like everybody else has legal problems, but they have difficulty paying for the access to justice. And what we do, we have an access to justice committee and a pro bono committee that goes throughout the entire state of Louisiana trying to help poor people get access to our justice system. You know, rich people can get access to the justice system because they can afford it. But poor people don't have as much access as they should have. And we do a lot of outreach going around the state trying to help that. You know, one of the things that got me to call you back was, I think it would be really nice if we could tone down the rhetoric a little bit about our judicial system. And I mean, we, like you said, we do a lot. The lawyers and the judges do a lot, but there's just a lot of rhetoric out there attacking our judges and our lawyers. And I would like to be a voice for that, to say that, you know, lawyers are good people, judges are good people, and we do good things. And I don't think the public is getting that message well enough, and don't really understand how important the rule of law is in our society.
When you say attack on judges, most of those attacks are relative to decisions that they've made, or what is stimulating that?
Well, I think what we're finding is that, and it's not on one side or the other, it's that people don't like the judge's decisions, and they call the judge stupid, rogue, corrupt, and in attacking the judge personally on both sides. I mean, there was an attempted assassination of Justice Kavanaugh, Supreme Court justice appointed by a Republican, and it's just that I just hear too much of public perception of the courts and the lawyers that are not good, and this extreme rhetoric. There's an increase, a spike in the threats against judges when there's so much negative media about the judges' opinions. It has gotten so bad that in some jurisdictions, the judges are wearing bulletproof vests. It has gotten so bad in some jurisdictions, people are sending the judge an unsolicited pizza to his or her house to let them know, I know where you live. They're also sending unsolicited pizzas to the houses of judges' children to let them know, not only do we know where you live, we know where your children live. That's frightening, and that's pressure being put on judges to render an opinion one way or the other, depending on who's sending the pizza to your house. Anyway, that's my issue du jour, is we all live by a rule of law, and we need to abide by the rule of law, regardless of what side you're on, and that we shouldn't trash our third branch of government if we don't like something that a judge is ruling in a certain way. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But it's important that we understand that we live in a society that has a rule of law and that we need to abide by it and admire it.
Well, I do believe that there's a place for criticism, but done so in a respectful manner. You know, part of the problem is when we start putting the labels on folks as to whether or not they're fascist, they're this, they're that, whatever it may be. I talked about this in my monologue this morning relative to ICE officers. ICE is an organization that was created and is funded billions of dollars to enforce the laws of the U.S. Code relative to immigration. What's really mystifying to me is that people are confused about what their role is, and it's, you know, they're very critical of them. They're calling them Nazis and this, and they're making people disappear from society. It's like, well, that's an arrest. You know, I did that for 40 years.
I know you did.
I don't understand where, you know, why we're at this place now where all of a sudden it's a problem. You know, I called out the Catholic Church this morning because we have archbishops and bishops and others saying, you know, that we're instilling fear in the community by enforcing the immigration laws. Well, you know this well, Ed, that deterrence is the fear of apprehension and detention. It's fear.
That's right. It is.
I mean, you know, so these mixed messages that we're sending folks, you know, out there, and I say this about judges. When they exercise discretion, that's a right that they have. I never publicly criticized a judge while I was sheriff, ever. If I had a disagreement with a judge, we did it in private. They have a role to fill. It's not an easy job. And the one thing that we're not the beneficiary of is all the evidence that was presented in court, right?
Exactly. When you see things on TV, you don't know what all the evidence is, even.
Right.
And people have an opinion based upon what they see on TV, not the actual evidence that's involved in the case.
Right. That's a little different, though, when we have judges that don't show up for work, and we have judges that have a docket that's five times larger than anybody else on the bench, and it's a little different than when we look at things statistically that outcomes are greater in one section of court than, like, not even close as it relates to other sections of court. It warrants a look-see, an audit, or otherwise. I have been somewhat critical of the Supreme Court for not exercising their oversight authority as it relates to judges. And what we're seeing are outcomes that are not really good. And, you know, and I used to say this about the policing business. We had no one to blame but ourselves if we didn't police ourselves better. And I think in some measure that's what the general public is actually looking for. But there's an appropriate way of saying it. I would totally agree with you.
The thing that I agree with what you said a few minutes ago, and that there's a way to be critical of the judges, and that is we have a judiciary commission, which I was on the judiciary commission for 4 years. It's three judges, three lawyers, and three what I call real people, not a judge or a lawyer, a regular citizen. And the Judiciary Commission reviews complaints that the public has against judges for violation of the law, violation of the canons that apply to judges. And the Judiciary Commission takes things very, very seriously. And if you don't like what a judge is doing, you don't need to go get a lawyer. You can write a letter to the Judiciary Commission and file a complaint against that judge. Also, which most people don't realize, is that you can file a complaint against the judge anonymously.
Yes.
Anonymously.
But you know as well as I that there were issues there because the outcomes were never released. There was not any level of transparency. And in many cases, the complainant themselves never found out what actually happened to the person they were complaining about. And, you know, so when we would go and exercise our right to vote in the election of a judge, if a judge had 10 judicial complaints against them and 8 of them were sustained, many people believe that would be of value as a voter to understand the context of that so that we could make a learned decision as to who we were going to vote for. Now, it's changed somewhat. I don't know that it's to the extent that the public really ultimately desires, and maybe we'll get there one day. But, you know, that in going back to what I said about what, you know, talking about policing business, if you don't police yourself appropriately and let the public know what you're doing, it'll come back and bite you. And it did for the judiciary, quite frankly. And I think it tipped the scales one way for a long time. I think it's beginning to come back, you know. And
well, I was just going to say
until we hear cases like of Judge Darryl Durbinick, not to bring up an individual, but, you know, just not showing up for work. And then when the pressure gets on, he takes a medical retirement and retires because he's obviously been ill and not even able to do it, but collecting a paycheck. And meanwhile, justice is not being served in that section of court. They assign two temporary judges there. One who's cleared a third of the docket in less than 40 days.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, well, if you do the work, if you're showing up at 8:30 every morning, you're ready to take the bench and do what you got to do, that's what happens. Good things happen, right?
Yeah, good things happen. But we do have a system, and it is more transparent than it was. When I was on the commission, we changed the rules considerably to let the public know what's going on. There's a website, Judiciary Commission has a website where you can track the certain cases, you can track the disposition of these cases, and it used to be that the public could not go to the hearing when the judge's case was being heard by the hearing officer. It's public now. You can go sit and watch the hearing of a judge before the hearing officer for the Judiciary Commission. That's pretty new.
And let's give credit where credit's due. I think in the last, year, maybe two, three, possibly four judges have been seriously sanctioned. And I think at least two have been removed from the bench. If my memory serves me correct, you would know better than I.
Yeah, there's been a lot of activity in that regard, and it's public, and it's on the website, and it tells you what the decision of the Judiciary Commission is, and what the decision of the hearing officer is, and the recommendation to the Supreme Court from the Judiciary Commission. All of that used to be private, and I mean, it used to be privileged or whatever, and the public was not able to have access to it, but they do have access to much of it now. They don't have access to everything now, because if you file a complaint saying, you know, Judge Jones is an idiot, well, that's not going to be
right.
Public. They screen out a lot of the crank letters.
And they should. But let's get back to your point, because I don't want to diminish it. We got a little bit sidetracked here. You described conduct, you know, with the sending of a pizza to their home, to their children's homes, to send the message, we know who you are, we know where you live. That is, in fact, a form of political violence. It's a threat, it's coercion, and there's no space in our society for that kind of conduct. And I would hope that, and I'm sure that my brothers in law enforcement, I know the sheriffs would take that very seriously, investigate it, and hopefully arrest those people and talk about those people, that this is not going to be tolerated in our communities.
I agree with that. The statistics I saw this morning were that the U.S. Marshals Service said that in 2025, there have already been 400 threats against federal judges this year. Federal judges, not just you know, state judges, federal judges. And I mean, that's a lot of threats.
Absolutely.
That's a lot.
And we don't hear about those, right? You don't hear about those. But that gives you a better understanding of the breadth and depth of what is actually happening in our country today.
Yeah.
And the lengths that people are willing to go to for whatever reason, I would suspect most of it is ideologically driven.
Right. And we see what ideologically driven things can happen with churches and schools and speakers. Whatever the ideology is, it may cause you to do some crazy things, and that's what we need to be really careful about. But you know, in America, like President Kennedy and President Reagan said, America is like the city on the hill, that everyone looks up to the city on the hill, and we set the tone, we set the message for the world as to how a society should be conducted. And boy, it's not looking good right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a zero-sum game, every issue, right? I mean, the notion of compromise, the word itself is a filthy word.
It is. What 90% of America wants is compromise.
Right. Well, and I mean, let's talk about lawyers for a second. That's almost every matter that they're involved in has the component of compromise, you know, running through it, right?
Well, like the statistics now are like, of all the lawsuits that are filed, 90% of them are compromised without going to trial. They go to mediation, or the lawyers work it out themselves. Same thing in criminal court. You know, there's a lot of trials, but not as many, because there's compromise, working things out, working together to get to a solution is what 90% of America wants from our justice system and our legislative system and all three branches of government. They want it to be logical and compromise, and not this rhetoric that we see about our three branches of government attacking our other branches of government. We got the best government in the world, but if we attack them, what does the rest of the world look at? They look at us attacking our system.
And I have to ask this question real quick. We're running out of time, but I think it's important. Why are we not talking about these threats to judges more? And because we're not hearing a lot about arrests being made, of these threats being made to judges. I think it would have a chilling effect on the conduct that we're seeing of these big stories that are out there reported in mainstream media every day. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think that it should be on the news, you know, and they say if it bleeds, it leads. So that certainly does bleed. You would think that there would be more media coverage of the fact that the U.S. Marshals say there were 400 threats against federal judges this year. You would think.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. I hope for all of us that we're not so desensitized now that this is just, you know, regular business on a regular day.
Well, it can't be. We have to fix
can't.
That. We're the city on the hill. If this is the way we act, what's the rest of the world going to do?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Ed Walters, president, Louisiana State Bar Association. Ed, anytime you want to come back, love discussion with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Newell. I'll call you back.
Thank you, sir. Ed Walters, president of Louisiana State Bar Association. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. We have Catherine. Catherine, what say you?
I heard part of your discussion about the legal system, and it's been my experience in the family court is that what I've noticed is that there's really seems to be no regulatory process or any type of oversight, you know, to make sure that these legal professionals are actually, you know, doing things in the proper way. And, you know, it's just like conflicts of interest abound. You know, from what I've observed, you know, codified processes are not followed. And then when you try to report it and have, you know, things done how the law says they're supposed to be done, it's just, you know, you're just basically ignored. And also I've noticed that it seems that a lot of things are done more to maximize the profits of the legal professionals in the court than to actually resolve things in you know, quick, efficient, and just way. And I've noticed, too, that appeals don't really work because they just go and look for, you know, errors in the way it was, the court process was run. They don't actually give you a retrial. So if these seasoned court professionals want to achieve a certain goal, you know, I've had experiences where, you know, my transcripts are not verbatim. My court minutes are not posted until after court events. Court minutes are actually even modified in, you know, after the fact. And, you know, that's just not how the law is written. And whenever I've tried to get relief, it's, you know, I haven't gotten any. So, you know, there needs to, I believe that there needs to be some sort of like regulatory process, like the banking industry or something has, because whenever you go into a court, you're very vulnerable and everything that you have is up for grabs. You know, everything, your liberty.
Catherine, are you a lawyer?
No, but I've just observed, you know, and I can read a law. I can go into the.
Yeah. Website, no, I was just curious
that,
because
that
I've always had this.
You have to be a lawyer to be able to understand English.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean it that way. Yeah, because the point I was going to make is I really believe that there should be uniform rules of court. And, you know, every court adopts their own rules. There are some that run throughout, but not enough, quite frankly. I think the sooner that we could get to that, where there's a standard that everyone has to adhere to, and we're not willing to accept anything less than that standard, which I think is what you're complaining again about, you know, and noticing in the court, because the inefficiencies in the court cost people money. You know, you have people that are that are taxed to the max. They can't afford to have an inefficient system because the, you know, lawyers want to charge what they need to charge. I get it. That's their livelihood. But I mean, you know, it's got to be more about the litigants. And it seems as though it's frustrating to you. And I agree. You know, we always creating an exception. That's not how it's typically done, but, you know, for the purposes of this, we'll create this exception. And then there's a winner and a loser every time you create an exception. And people get frustrated. Am I missing the point? Yep. We lost Catherine. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back, we are going to visit with retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force, Colonel Alex Gann. We have talked to the colonel many times. President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu and the leader of Qatar have put forward a comprehensive plan to end the Gaza conflict. We'll talk about that and other issues and the response of the Israeli population. At 12:30, Teresa Campbell joins us, founder and CEO of Safer Schools Together. Teresa's in town as a featured speaker at the GSX and AIS Security Convention. We'll talk about risk is everywhere.